You've had this property many years.
32 years. It was all pasture when we got here, so just about all the trees except two small blocks we've planted and nurtured.
How often do you think of what lies under the land beneath your feet? Ian Moore would like farmers and foresters to dig deeper and really understand what's the best use of the land. He's a geologist and forest consultant with decades of experience in the Pacific and his home district of Whanganui. You're listening to Country Life. I'm Sally Round, and I've come for a stroll with Ian to see how he's managed to graze stock, nurture wildlife and native trees, as well as manage plantings for harvest in the future.
You see this kahikatea all here, and they're just starting to show up now.
Are they self-seeded or you planted those?
No, we planted all, seed gathered locally, and in fact a lot of the trees here also came from the prison nursery. When you plant them, you think, where the heck are they? Then these are about 7 years old now. Suddenly, here they all are. And if you can picture, this whole gully is a land full of kahikatea like they used to be.
Huge, tall, straight trees, massive.
It's clear Ian knows every inch of this 200 hectares of hill country, 15 kilometres northeast of Whanganui. It's part experiment, part passion, part legacy to future generations.
You've got to understand the geology here, and basically this was all under the sea 500,000 years ago. And now it's, 600 metres above.
And what does that mean for the type of tree that needs to be here?
Well, it means a lot because there's a vast difference between a sunny face, which is harder and drier, to the shady face. And within that strata, you have, particularly here, you have alternating bands of sand, silts and clays. And the rain that falls up on the terraces actually permeates through the sand layers till it hits a harder basement, and then the water flows out as springs. And that's why I've fenced this side off and replanted, because those springs are actually a natural breeding area for the tuna. So it's understanding that sort of biodiversity element.
Have you noticed the numbers increasing?
Oh, very much so. And the neighbour down the bottom who was cleaning his stream out, and he just said, crikey, I've never seen so many eels in my whole life. Just every bucket of creek debris he took out was just full of these young tuna. And
so, Ian, when you bought this land 30 years ago, what was your aim with it?
I wanted to plant a few trees and have our own block of land, a place to bring up the children and others, and also to encourage a few deer to come around that maybe we could shoot one or two.
He also wanted to show trees and stock could coexist. He grazes 600 ewes and over the autumn 100 head of cattle. They're off before they can start pugging the soil in winter.
I don't know if you can see from here, there's another big wetland beyond here. There's altogether seven wetlands to the side, and we stepped the water down from each one. If you brought a bottle of whiskey with you, we could have a beautiful drink with that water, because
that
the water
pure
quality at each stage has been improved. I'm quite happy sitting on the bulldozer playing, making another dam, and every time I walk around the place I think, gosh, I could put another dam there. And we've now got, I think, 25 wetlands like this on the whole property. Most are fenced off and planted with native trees.
Ian's planted exotics too. Poplars, oaks, eucalyptus and macrocarpa, to name a few. There are also a couple of small pine tree blocks nearing harvest. In fact, most of the trees are expected to be harvested at some stage. Ian plans to retire more land to protect the wetlands and also plant species which take longer to get to harvestable size and natives where they suit the land. His plans come from decades of experience.
Principally, I'm a geologist soil scientist, and I spent several years as an exploration geologist in New Guinea, Solomons, Fiji, outback Australia. I came back after 6 years away and met my lovely
Pam, who's just behind us.
And I joined the catchment board. There was a lot of erosion in our hill country. It was quite easy to say, look, this land should be in trees, this particular geological belt. And so the last 40 years I've spent my time planting a lot of the Maunganui hill country. And then we've got into the harvesting cycle, so I've been managing a lot of the harvesting.
And you're talking about pine trees?
Not only pine trees, but mainly pine. But there's certainly a swing, a noticeable swing to this native restoration. And you haven't climbed the rest of the hill, but...
We'll get up there.
There's, like over there, there's a block of 15-year-old totara, which we pruned and thinned, and one day they'll be very valuable. Just having our first harvest, there's one area there that I've decided, or we've decided, will go into totara, and it'll be sort of semi-permanent watershed protection forever. But you can actually harvest them. The trees will be registered. There's another block up here with kahikatea that have pruned and thinned, and they're looking absolutely beautiful. And if I'm around in another 40 years, I'll harvest some of those too. So.
And what have you noticed among your clients in the forestry side of things? What have you noticed they're wanting, and what are you advising?
They're all a different bunch, and some still focus on a blade of grass and that's a dollar in the bank, whereas people of our vintage suddenly appreciate that there's a little bit more to dollars and the environmental swing in the last 10 to 15 years has been really rewarding to see people saying, oh, what can I do? And it's really seeding the idea, but so often it's not just seeding the idea, it's making it happen. So you really have to get involved with them and work with them to achieve it.
That must be very satisfying for you.
It is. That's why I get up in the morning after my beauty sleep and head out.
At the heart of Ian's work is matching land use to land type.
Trees are definitely a part of that, but the trees don't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily be pines. Drier, sunnier, steeper faces, eucalypts, acacias and others are well worth it. In a lot of these gullies up here, we've retired areas like this and we're planting natives, purely natives, but some for timber production. We're very keen on our birds and our bees and our wildlife. So yes, there's trees that go in for nectar particularly. And if you come here a month or two ago, you'd see 50 to 60 tui getting the nectar on these. It's absolutely beautiful.
What about the pine tree forests? Some people fear this is a monoculture, there's no life under there. What do you think?
You're raising another thing near to me. Everyone says the soil is acid and won't grow anything afterwards, or that's a load of ballyhoo. The nutrient recycling is almost 100%, you know, in basic elemental terms. And we've had areas that we've taken out of trees, pine trees, and put back to pasture and had beautiful pasture come up. One of my theme songs probably is, with a lot of Whanganui hinterland, is we've got pine trees in ridiculous places for carbon, whereas we should have native trees regenerating. But come on, government, let's give us a bit more encouragement for that land use change. And that doesn't necessarily have to be carbon credits because they're a measurable entity. It's more about the incentive and encouragement to do it, be it by, you know, adequate fencing or weed control. being a sort of environmentalist, I just marvel at the lessening of siltation and improvement of water quality through here. If Whanganui didn't have so much hill country now and trees, the effects of these heavy downpours would, the flooding would be a hell of a lot worse than we get. So this is actually a sponge soakage in flood times.
You've got poplars on that very steep pasture land up there.
Yeah.
They're doing a job?
They're holding the hills together and understanding the mechanism of slippage. Slips occur in different places, like change of slope from the top and rilling and tomos at the bottom. And tomos are underground watercourses. So by planting a poplar in strategic places, you're actually stopping the silt coming down those tomos, and it builds up and no more lamb losses.
Do you bring farmers here just to see what they can do with their land in terms of tree versus pasture?
I have, and you go through phases of encouraging people to come, and I'll show you what I've done and perhaps you'll learn from it. And other times I'm afraid I get a bit sick and tired of too many people, so I like to be here just with ourselves and, you know, close friends and family. So, but we have had a focus on youngsters, any youngster that wants to come and learn about trees or anything, they're welcome any time. Usually to get them to plant a tree in winter time is the way to start them on their way and put a stake and put their name with it. Our next project here will be to run a fence down that ridge there and then fence off that native bush at the top. See how the Niko is growing up there?
On the skyline there.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That bush. It's got a beautiful lot of Niko, so that's the only bush on the property that isn't fenced off at the moment.
The focus here is biodiversity and riparian planting, but even so, stock still have access to most of the land.
There's quite a bit of pasture land around here up into these terraces. So,
no sheep here today, though?
Yes, there's sheep there.
They're over there, yes.
And in the shade under those lovely
trees. They are. There's plenty of shade for these animals.
Yeah. And they do well with shade. Good lambing. Particularly at this time of year, building up to tupping, they put on weight, especially the seasons we've just had with abundant moisture. So every time I have a digger here, I widen the tracks a little bit and I improve the runoff so that you know, water is more controlled. And because I had a digger here, I just made another little pond here, just because otherwise sort of be nice to have a pond there.
You've got a bit of a romantic streak in you, Ian.
Don't tell my wife that.
Well, yes, well,
that
I mean,
might be why she married me.
you love the landscape and you love...
I love land, as this would be a true statement.
What do you think of the way farming is being done at the moment in terms of land use?
I think 80% of farmers are moving rapidly with appreciation of improvements they can make. Sometimes people saying what farmers should do are made by someone sitting in an armchair in an office, whereas I don't have the deep affinity with the land that's so important in decision making.
There's a
puka keiko
taking off.
The kids used to call them puka keikos.
And next door we have pines.
This is our second rotation. We've already harvested this block, but this had been planted before we got here. When we got here, the whole place was in pasture except for about 3 hectares of trees, and this 1 hectare of pines here is one of those. These in front of you are the kahikatea that have been pruned and thinned and growing in the damper, wet, shady areas. And this whole gully is like this with native regen underneath. Natural regen is amazing in this part of the country. It just happens. But you don't want this blackberry.
Oh, there's a lot of that blackberry in that gully, isn't there?
Yeah.
Would you advocate that farmers do this kind of mixed planting?
To a certain extent, but only if they sit down and think about it now. For example, here, if you look around, when these trees come out, we won't plant any exotic trees under this track. That'll all be indigenous, native, and trees that we will look after, because it's more a natural watercourse protection zone, and it's been defined now and will always be that way. Whereas to harvest these any stage, you're going to end up with slash and stuff, and you've spent a fair bit of time clearing out the watercourses.
Your slash is a big issue, isn't it, with these large pine forests that are coming down?
Yeah,
we see the results on the beaches down at the east coast, don't we?
Yes, I've been involved with that. I'd just say caution. There's lots of issues with that. There's caution. The source of the slash has often been storm events gone through, and trees have died, say, 6-10 years before harvest. There are issues with whoever gave planning approval to build houses on some of those, or close to those alluvial terraces, need to have their hands smacked. So it's not just forest companies doing it, I admit, combined with, you know, unusual storm events with climate change. They're all attributes that have caused this. It's not just one forest company or this or that. It's a combination of factors. And back to my favourite theme, some of those forests have never been planted in places where you get that skeletal soil surface that slips down as well. So don't be driven by mega bucks from ETS or forest income. Think carefully about land use and that.
So is it okay, do you think, for farmland to be going into forestry blocks?
It does worry me, and it worries me with farms I know here that have gone into trees, not only pine trees, but into Manuka, for example, prime productive land that should have other attributes preserved for future generations, and food production for the world's one of them.
And you're in the throes of making a bigger dam here.
I've been playing with mud since I was a kid. I haven't lost the interest. So here's another little wetland.
Beautiful. It'll be a nice shady one here.
Very much so. And wildlife and the duck shooting season, you know, we'll just go and hide up in there.
Sustainable wood harvesting, protecting biodiversity and water quality, hunting as well as running stock, all seems possible with Ian's knowledge and passion.
It's possible, but it's actually understanding everything from what's under the ground to applying knowledge to what's above the ground, and it's just like a big jigsaw, really. And I still don't understand it because the climate keeps changing. And I use a word that I coined, which is biogeoclimatic zones, which means you've got to look at things from the biology, which is plants and animals, geology, how the land was formed and what makes it, and climatic is the influences of rainfall, dry summers, everything else. So, and I'd like to see a lot of our hinterland mapped into biogeoclimatic zones and treated accordingly, and that comes back to matching land use to land type.
Ian Moore on his 200-hectare block near Whanganui. He says a lot of the planting's possible with grants and friends and family nurturing trees from seed, but he'd like to see more consistency with the funding available so he can plan long term.